A Pod Forte Podcast.
The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode of the Next CMO podcast, Kelsey and I speak to Dave Gerhart about his new book, Founder Brand, Turn Your Story into Competitive Advantage. In his new book, Dave pulls from his experience as the chief brand officer at Drift and the CMO of Privy, where he helped create incredibly successful outcomes for these companies by establishing powerful brand stories based on their founders. Dave also shares his innovative ideas about marketing via his popular marketing community called DGMG and on LinkedIn and Twitter. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, Dave, I am so excited to have you on the Next CMO podcast. And the first question I have to ask you about this book that we're going to talk about is, why in the world did you write the book, Dave?
Because I saw how well your book did, and I was trying to keep, I wanted to create a lead magnet like that for myself.
Okay, wait a minute, so, I copied you because you did the conversational marketing first.
You did, and that book was really meaningful to Drift. But I think I liked your strategy with the book. Like it felt self-published in a good way. Like you did it on your own. It was thinner, smaller, super tactical, no fluff, actionable, and I really liked that. And honestly, the reason why I wanted to write a book is I knew that after I kind of left working for companies, I did want to write a book about marketing at some point. And I was kind of torn between a couple different topics, and I was trying to think about like in marketing and in business in general, like, you know, if you can teach, it's really powerful to be able to teach a framework or name something. And I was like, I wanted to try that exercise for myself. And so I'm like, what have I done over the last 5 to 10 years working in marketing? Because I kind of have a certain way of doing things, as we all do, like, you know, your flavor, right? We can make the same dish, but it might come out differently and taste differently. And I thought about, wow, when I went to Drift, very first thing that I did, we were 6 months before launching the product. I was not like head of marketing Dave. I was not CMO Dave. I got hired as marketing manager Dave, and we were 6 months to launch. And my mission was to build an audience for Drift. And the way that we did that was through David Cancel, who was the CEO, and he had been a well-known founder in the space at the time. And so we'll talk more about that later, but I did that, and that was transformational for Drift and like in telling that story. And then I went to another company 4 years later called Privy and did a similar thing with Ben, who's the CEO there. And I've kind of felt something in my personal life through my own social media. And I was like, there's something here to like marketing the founder and building a brand for the founder. And I've just seen that like as someone who is running marketing teams, the marketing team has so much stuff to do already. You got to deliver on pipeline. You got to deliver on revenue. And it's not to say that this strategy doesn't. It's just different. It works in a different way. And typically inside of a company, we kind of only focus on the product story. We only focus on the demand gen short-term goal today. And I wanted to write this book because I wanted to give marketing teams and founders this playbook, because I think it's really powerful, and I think it's more important than ever today, because we live in a world where people want to buy from people that they know, like, and trust, and we want to buy from brands that kind of exist for a reason, right? Like, Peter didn't start Plana because he was a CMO and he wanted to get super rich after and go start a startup. Startups are hard. You have to be crazy to do this. You have to be crazy to do it. You have to have some deep connection or passion or some past experience. And so like the founder story can be used to such an advantage. And I found that like 90% of the founders, at least that I know, I'd say 99% of them have some deep story. David and Elias, they started Drift because they had 10 years of sales and marketing software experience. They built a product, the HubSpot, blah, 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 right? You started Planet because in your past life, you saw how hard it was and how inefficient marketing teams were at operating. Shopify, Toby, the founder of Shopify, he was an engineer and he was trying to find a way to like sell snowboards online, and there wasn't an easy way to do that. And so they built Shopify. There's always seems to be some story. And I think that it can be such a powerful ingredient to marketing. So I wanted to give people a playbook that they could steal from. And then the last thought on this is, I still think that most founders either don't take social media seriously or they don't use it in the right way as a brand and company building tool. And so I wanted to give people some like actionable no fluff, because we do live in the YouTube and TikTok era, but the two channels that I recommend in the book are Twitter and LinkedIn. And those are just text-based channels that you could be, you know, writing messages while you're, you know, sitting in your car, you know, waiting, or sitting at the kitchen table for 2 minutes. So I want to make it super actionable for people.
Well, it's great. And it is super actionable, by the way. And I love the book. Founder Brand is amazing. I got the pre-release manuscript nearly done with a couple of a screenshot will go here pictures. I'm looking forward to
that. Is that the one that I sent you?
Yeah, that's the one you sent me.
You can tell here, Peter, we have a very buttoned up approach to this book tour that we're doing. So, exactly. You know.
Well, and I only had a couple of days to read it. But I got through it in the first one because it was just really well written. I'm not surprised, because Dave, I love the way you write and the way you advocate that people write. So it was super clean and clear. But it's also the kind of book, and we were talking before we hit the record button, that I'm just going to go back to a lot, because you also get very specific, which is pretty cool.
Lesson that I learned, just like a side note on that, like one lesson that I learned about reading and learning that was really transformational for me was, I used to like obsess about reading books and be like, okay, I got Peter's book. I gotta memorize every page. I'm going to read, you know, all 200 pages of this book. And I don't know what he said in chapter three. What was chapter? If you're going to go and spend $12, $16, whatever on a book, like to me, it's, can you get one or two new ideas and new lessons? Is that worth it? Would you spend $15 to get a new idea? And so like I wanted to, and I've even felt that way as a marketer, right? If you do an event, we sweat so much about all the event details, but it's kind of like the wedding. Like, you know, at my wedding, we kind of felt like people are going to remember, like, was the music good and was the food good and did I have fun? They're not going to remember the minute by minute details. And I think if you take that approach to learning, I don't expect people to sweat every detail of this, but if you get one thing, hey, this section and you had in chapter one really helped me rewrite my explainer for my company, or your book was the thing that pushed me to actually start my podcast, that would be success for me. I don't expect people to try to go and memorize every word of this. No way.
Well, I love the basic fundamental premise that you have, Dave. And again, you've done this a few times. And there's also something meta about this, of course, because you're now doing this for yourself, which is kind of interesting, right? You're creating your own brand and your own story. But the thing that's interesting is that it's this universal thing. I think founders tend to be really interesting. In fact, I noticed at one point there was an interesting juxtaposition between an example that you had of Drift and Spanx right next to each other. And, you know, I don't know how David would feel about that, but
I stole that from him. He loved Sarah Blakely and that story. And so like, I guess the reason that I put that in there was because that was an example of a founder who had built a brand, you know?
Well, and exactly. And for anyone who's heard anything about that story, it's a perfect example of a well-told sort of mythical founder story where she personally felt a problem. She went and she solved it and made herself a billionaire and made a lot of happy women, which is
simple.
Pretty cool.
Buy the book, Founder Brand. You will become a millionaire. You will become a millionaire overnight.
Billionaire, I thought we were saying.
I'm just interested in the M's first, but yes, thank you.
Excellent. So I like the way you frame this, because the thing that's interesting about a founder, and you said, you talk about three things, content, personality, and relationships. And maybe you can expand a little bit on those three things that really drive the sort of the purpose and in the theory behind why building up a founder brand makes sense.
So on the content side, I think to me, the marketing team is struggling so much for content, or, you know, what are we going to put out? Or even maybe you don't have a marketing team, you're just a founder. I think that inherently the founder is the one who is in any one day could be doing a podcast interview, doing a recruiting call after this, having a call with investors and advisors, speaking at a key industry event, talking to two customers. That's like an average day. You're thinking about the transformation of your company, your technology, your product. You're deep in your customer's world every single day. I think like that, to me, that is the best content. And I'm just asking you to basically turn an on switch on and just think about how can I be sharing some of that. And so if you're Peter and you're building a software company for B2B marketers, you're living this world all day. I don't just want you to just be pumping out like, hey, go to this webinar from Planna. Tell me, like, tweet about, like, talk about that we did this podcast. Talk about you've been looking for a director of events for 6 weeks now, and you're noticing one trend across these interviews or the best candidates, or, you know, you have some strong point of view on the market. And you do, because you're the founder. If you don't have a strong point of view on the market and where things are going, then you're not going to be in business very long. And so most founders are already thinking about those things. And so I'm just saying, like, can you turn some of that on? And then the personality piece is related to that. I think as consumers today, we want to buy from brands that, like, we feel like we know. And I think I see this in my personal, you know, we see this in our personal lives. And I think the same is true no matter what you're selling. And so, like, the brands that I like the most today are actually not even big companies that you might recognize, but there's like I got really into yoga over the last year, and I found this YouTube channel called Breathe and Flow Yoga. And it's like this guy and his wife, but he teaches yoga, and he has a whole 20 minute videos called like Yoga for Men. And that was amazing. And that got me hooked on his stuff. And now I'm following them, and they're having a baby. I have little kids. They're sharing a lot of stuff about their pregnancy and their life and their routine. Now I'm hooked and I love that. Then I joined their Patreon. Next thing you know, I'm buying merch and gear from them. And like, that's how we do things in our personal lives. It's no different in the B2B world. And I'd actually argue that it's more important in the B2B world, because B2B buying, as you all know, is complex, right? There's 18 to 20 decision makers in a buying process. We're not talking about spending $50 on a yoga video. We're talking about spending $50,000, $100,000, $500,000 on a enterprise level deal for the year. Don't you think that having someone know, like, and trust you during that process would be beneficial? And so I think that's such a key ingredient of where buying is going. And you have the channel. This is not 20 years ago, where the only way people would be able to know Peter as the CEO of Planna is if, you know, Kelsey and the marketing team happen to get him a big interview on CNBC, right? You can reach your direct customer. You can reach all your customers online directly today through Twitter, through LinkedIn, through having a podcast, through having an email list, through doing events and creating a community. I think the bigger change here is like using that content and personality to build your own audience and not have to rely on you know, third party outlets to get your message out there.
Yeah, I think you're right on about it, Dave. And a question though that comes to mind is, do you have to have a really compelling founder to be able to take this strategy? What if your founder's kind of lame?
Well, then I wouldn't work at your company. Sorry.
That's probably a good point.
Good answer.
I think that this advice, I don't want it to get mixed up with like that you have to be very extroverted or love seeing yourself on camera or love doing speaking. And it's actually why, like, I think Dharmesh from HubSpot is a great example. He would tell you that he is one of the most introverted people, and that guy is prolific on social media. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I recommend Twitter and LinkedIn in the book and not TikTok and YouTube and Instagram. And those are all great channels. And I plan on using them to build my business. But for the sake of a founder, if your natural inclination is not to do a podcast, you don't want to do these Zoom calls or, you know, interviews and stuff, that's why I say text, because you're writing emails all day. You're in Slack all day. You're communicating to people all day. Take some of that and put it out online. And the powerful part is like, I think you're probably not lame. You might not be, you know, Steve Ballmer level energy and like, and bring that, but you probably have some deep, unique take. And so if you're not the super extroverted founder, what if you are an expert, a super deep expert in your niche? You can be sharing that stuff. And when you do that, you're going to attract like-minded people. And so even if you come from a cybersecurity background, or you have some deep technical thing, you don't have to turn that into some super catchy YouTube channel to get traction. That's not what it is. It's about, you probably have a really unique point of view on the market and some very, you know, strongly held beliefs about what you're doing. Share some of that stuff. And there's a way to do it where you're not giving away your trade secrets, but you should be sharing, you know, your point of view on the market. And so my point is, don't hire a 20 grand a month PR agency to do it. Use Twitter and LinkedIn to do that. And when you do that, you're going to get direct feedback and start to learn what's working anyway. And then you can choose to invest in those channels as you grow over time.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because say you have a great founder that's, you know, ready to tell their story, but the bottleneck here is the marketing team. The marketing team is so tactical. They don't understand, you know, how to tell this story. What are some of those common objections that they face, and how do you get over that to understand how important it is to tell that founder story?
The common objections from the marketing team?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think the most common objection is probably time. We want to do this. We're busy. Either we're busy or we can't get Peter to sit down and give us any time. One thing that we did at Drift that was really, really effective was, I would just get David in a room for 30 minutes a week and I would interview him. And that was actually the thing that led us to starting the podcast, was I would interview him in the room, and that audio ended up becoming conversational. We were like, huh, there might be something here. And we ended up turning that into our podcast called Seeking Wisdom. And so in the very early days, though, I would interview him for 30 minutes and then I would go back and sit at my desk and I would literally listen to that. And verbatim, I would go through and try to ghostwrite content for him. And so he didn't have the time to do it. I was forcing his hand. But then on my end, yes, I did have other things to do. But this was maybe, you know, an hour or two out of the week. I also think it's one of those habits and routines that you have to find a way to make it a thing. And there's trade-offs to anything. But it's like, hey, I want to get in better shape, but I don't have any time to work out. Okay, so you just take the magic pill that makes you in shape and makes you healthy, right? Like you're going to have to decide. And I would argue that I'm around a lot of marketing teams, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. We're not always doing meaningful things. That there's lots of fat that can be trimmed out at any given time. And so I would recommend like trying this for 3 months and seeing that. And like instead of doing that monthly webinar that six people attend and you're not really sure how much, you know, ROI you're getting from that, like, why don't we cut that and start like try to use the founder as a megaphone and see if we can get them to publish. I also think like there's other things from around the company that you can use to stitch together if you're the marketing team. And so like at Drift and Privy, the founders send out updates internally. They write wiki posts. Here's my point of view. I would kind of always be thinking, what's in there that I could pull out, tweak it to make it okay to post publicly and share that? Because even if you don't have the time, the founder is no doubt communicating in some form internally. And so like in this case, there's probably some notes in an internal plan, a Slack channel or wiki or something where something's happened in the market. Peter or whoever has commented on it, can you take that and be like, whoa, this is a gem. Let me take this and use that. And like at Drift, David would send like a Sunday night email with something like inspirational or something on his mind to the team. And like that became gold from a marketing standpoint. Yeah, we're not going to share our internal, you know, roadmap, but like if some big thing happened in the market and he comments on it internally to drive product strategy and roadmap and this and that, I'm just kind of always, and this is how I've become a marketer. my angle is always like, how can we take this and turn it into something that we can use? And so I think maybe you could just start to think about that a little bit. Like, how could I take this existing thing and use it?
You talk a lot
another thing you can do, by the way, on the interview side of things. This is an approach that I would have done now had it been more of a medium, but like, you could also interview, like I could have interviewed David on video for 30 minutes, just us on video, like on Zoom. And I could have made video clips of him saying things. And like those clips, I could have, we don't even have to have, you don't even have to get anybody to go on your podcast or, hey, nobody's inviting me on my podcast. Great. How about record a Zoom call with someone on your team yourself, cut those clips out yourself and chop them up into little sound bites. Like there's enough you can do on your own without others.
I like some of the focus that you just highlighted there, Dave, is the idea of making a habit, consistency, and I like the idea that you talk about sort of reuse and repurposing of content. You know, you create a podcast, there should be two other pieces of content that you get out of that. And I think that's exactly right on. And I find over my many years of doing this, I've seen a lot of marketing people spend a lot of time creating something and they use it once. And they don't realize that there's some really great derivative work that you can use there and recut and republish. And it's far more efficient to take something that's great and cut out a bunch of gems and repurpose it than to try to come up with that initial inspiration from the beginning.
I've said this a lot. If I had like no budget or very, very little budget, like hundreds of dollars in budget, and I had to build a brand from scratch, I would say doing a podcast would probably be the only thing that I would do. Because like the leverage that you could get from this 1 hour interview, you know, we'll get video clips from it. We'll get a transcript from it. Maybe this episode does really well. And we learn that this is a topic that our audience likes. And so we should do a webinar about this, you know, next week. I think it's why I love this channel so much, is that you get lots of leverage from it.
And you really inspired me to do our podcast. I don't know if I ever told you that, Dave, but you said one thing at one point that I said, holy cow, I need to do that. And it was, if you ever want to learn something about a subject, you know, create a podcast and then just invite all the smartest people in the world to tell you about it.
I think about this so much.
Free education.
I think about this so much. By the way, how has the podcast been from a business perspective? How long have you been doing it? And how do you talk about the impact that it's had on the company?
Yeah, so this is episode 67 that we're doing. So we've been doing it for about a year and a half now. And it's mostly weekly, sometimes depending on sort of backlog and things, that it'll go every other week. And I think it's had a huge impact. We've got many customers who've cited the podcast as how they've learned about us for the first time. So I know there's a significant amount of customer acquisition that we've gotten from the podcast. I think it's really helped get our message out there and people engage with our content. And part of what we're trying to do is create a community. And this is often sort of the entry point to our community. People listen to the Next CMO podcast and then they join the Next CMO community. We've got a circle community, and they then collaborate and talk to each other, and then they become part of the movement. And so we think it's got huge impact.
And when you say customers tell you that, is that an actual trackable thing that you have? Like you ask customers where they came from, or is it an anecdotal, like, you know, you just hear it?
It's more anecdotal at this point. The fact that I've had, I think, three customers offer that to me, that they learned about me from the podcast the first time. So how many have not told me about it?
Right. Well, I love, not to hijack your interview, but I love just asking people about this because it's cool to hear the impact. But I think your business and your podcast is like the perfect niche that you focus on where this can be effective. And you don't have to have a podcast that reaches, and I talk about this in the book, my guess is your podcast does not have hundreds of thousands of downloads, and that doesn't matter. It's a very meaningful in your niche. It could be hundreds of downloads, and that can be really, really meaningful. But I also love that from what I know about you, you're very analytical and data driven. And I think a lot of people on the surface that have your makeup would be like, well, let's do the podcast for a month, but I need to see the ROI on it before we continue. And what I tell people is like this, I see this over and over and over again. You have to just do it because you feel it. And then you feel like, no, team, we got to keep doing this. I don't know the number. Maybe it's one customer, maybe it's not. But there's also these like benefits that are harder to quantify. Like you mentioned, the smart thing, right? So you've now, as the CEO of this company, done 67 interviews with customers in your ICP. In yep. addition to the things that you're doing, right? And so that's great content. And so I think like I push people to like just go and do it, and you have to do it for months and months and shut up and not think about it, because the benefits are so often these intangible things. And like we used to joke in the early days of Drift, it became like an internal meme. We joked whenever we'd get like a comment about like, oh, I listen to Seeking Wisdom and I bought Drift, or I listen to Seeking Wisdom and I sent it to a friend or whatever, we'd screenshot it and we'd put it in Slack, and we would joke, David and I would joke to each other in front of the whole company, how are we ever going to measure the ROI on this podcast? And it became this like internal meme that like years later, the company would be 300 people, and we'd like have this Monday metrics meeting. We'd show screenshots of somebody who said they loved the podcast, and we'd be like, how are we going to measure this? And so I think it's like the internal team has to also feel it. And some people don't like this, but I did it anyway. I use a lot of, in addition to data and hard numbers, I like to, as a marketing leader, use a lot of screenshots of stuff like that in board decks or management decks, because I do think that's a lot of marketing is that feeling. And like, I just love sharing screenshots of somebody who has interacted with our content in a meaningful way and gotten really a ton of value from that. And then I wrote down in my notes, because I like to ramble, and then like I have something that I want to come back to, smart. And you mentioned that. And I actually think I'm a very average marketing leader. But I've done over the years, I've talked to hundreds of people. Like I get to talk to you 3-4 times a year for an hour. And by osmosis, you start to soak some of that in. And so I think that, I have gotten better at marketing because of that. I'm really into golf and fitness right now. And I haven't launched it yet, but I have this idea. I'm like, what if I apply that same, like, doing a podcast in marketing for the last basically 6-7 years has been such a game changer for me. What if I took that same approach to like something that I want to learn personally, like golf or fitness, right? And I'm like, my secret, like my Trojan horse for learning is like doing this podcast, because I get to talk to 100 experts. And so it's really cool to hear you bring that out, because that's how I measure this beyond the hard sales ROI. Like, be the founder that's on pace to do 100 interviews with your dream customers this year. And by the way, you also get to use that as media content for your company. That's really powerful.
So it's amazing trying to corral the Dave Gerhart brain here. You can see the... You go a million miles an hour in a million different directions. But you're able to communicate these points, which is interesting. And in fact, what you've done in your book, I find really interesting, is that it's a very thoughtful, thorough, well-organized, and complete approach to your book. So if you think about it, it's not just this idea of create a founder brand. It's create a founder brand, why you do it, how you do it, how you create the message and the story around the founder brand, and then actually how you communicate it and send it out. So it is actually an end-to-end functional guide to get there. And one of the things you mentioned a minute ago that I wanted to highlight, which I think is super smart, is the idea of niching down. And I think it's a really important concept for people if you want to be and if you want to be a leader in the market, sometimes you need to find your wedge in. So can you talk a little bit about how you think about niching down?
No, I want to talk about tennis because my brain is going crazy. No,
I just insult you, Dave. Are you all right?
By the way, the reason that the book is organized into coherent thought is because of the magic use of working with an editor. Like I didn't roll out of bed and was like, here's the perfect framework for this. Like, thank goodness. Thank goodness for Chris, who helped me edit this, which is amazing. She was very instrumental. And we organized it into three nice sections. And now I even lost what we were going to talk about right
Niching
there.
Down.
Okay. So everybody loves, this is not a rail against category creation, but I just think that everybody loves to talk about category creation today. And I think if you actually go and read the Play Bigger, Chris Lockhead stuff, like what they're talking about is like Apple, Google, Tesla level category creation. And I think that that's great to have those ambitions, but like, what if you want to build like a nice $2 million business for yourself that's highly profitable, or your goal as a SaaS company is to do $50 million in or whatever. And so you don't have to, it doesn't have to be this massive thing. And so I think a lot of people run to the category approach, but what they miss is like, and Chris Lockhead has actually wrote something amazing about this called niche down. And I love that term. Is the most powerful thing to me is owning a niche. And because when you like it's so easy to try to be everything to everyone, because you know your product can do these 30 things and you got these types of customers and you got this one big customer who's, hey, look, you know, we don't sell to finance, but we have one huge customer in finance. And so how do we angle our story towards finance? The most powerful thing you can do is own a niche and be specific to somebody. And then you can use that niche. If you have greater ambitions beyond that niche over time, you can use that niche as like the wedge to get into these other places. And so like early days of Drift, our focus was we were a B2B sales and marketing product. We didn't go to the whole market at once. We focused exclusively on product marketers because we had a hypothesis that product marketing owned the website. We needed to get this chat widget on the website. If we could get to product marketing, we could probably then get Drift installed and have success. And if we have success, we could probably then expand to demand gen and to content and to sales and to customer success. And so it's really important to focus on a niche. And if I was going to go do this like a golf thing that I've talked about, I couldn't just go start another golf podcast. I would have to find some niche, and that could be like, it'd have to be something like the working dad golf podcast or Golf in Vermont podcast. It's just, it's always more meaningful. You will get traction quicker the more you can niche down.
So another question I had is that you've now done this founder brand approach. You could argue this is your at least your third time, because you're doing it for yourself, I think. Mm-hmm. But you did it with David. You did it with Ben. So take those two examples. Were they meaningfully different? So what strikes you as either what you learned going from David to Ben, or just how different they were as you started to deploy some of these techniques between those two very different people?
Very different people. Yeah, they were definitely different. So even the stage was different. And so at Drift, we basically did brand founder brand first, company built alongside it. At Privy, it was the opposite. When I went to Privy, they had 500,000 users on Shopify, close to $10 million business, but they didn't have the founder didn't have wasn't well known by customers and people in that industry. And so that part was different. The other part was different was Ben was like, I love this. I've always wanted to have a podcast. I'm going to do this. I'll do a daily podcast. You want to do a daily podcast? You think that'd be, and I was like, are you serious? That'd be amazing. Sure. Let's do it. And we created a really simple system and he loved it. And he had the whole spreadsheet himself of topics, and people would be, you know, it was amazing. His system for this was like, he was in it. Like he would go do a meeting with an investor, have an idea from that call, put it in his spreadsheet of like topics, and then save it for later. And then he'd see an anecdote from a customer who like did something to improve the conversion rate or the website. And he'd write that down, put it in the spreadsheet. And he would basically take an hour or two a week and just kind of batch record 5 to 10 soup. They were like, you know, little snacks, like e-commerce. It was e-commerce marketing school. And so it was very tactical. And he was very tactical. And that was he had built this company and he had kind of grown up through the company giving advice on the phone to customers. Like, and that's how he won. Hey, Peter, I'm going to help you and fix a conversion rate on your website. Whereas David was much more of the like industry veteran, thought leader. He's not going to record a 5-minute podcast every single day. We could maybe chop that up and do it. And so the angle for Drift was more about, here's a guy who's later in his career than Ben. He's had a couple of exits. He's had a lot of success. What angle do we have? He's not going to be the one in the weeds talking about marketing nuts and bolts. He's really passionate about learning and personal development and self-improvement. Is there an angle there that's interesting to our customers as marketers? And so we took a completely different angle where he was doing, you know, book reviews and life tips. That was not a podcast that was very tactically marketing focused. Both of those work to grow their respective companies. They were just different angles. I actually haven't even thought about that too much, but it's kind of cool to see you can take the approach. So I think it comes back to the hook. And the hook is Ben knew his audience and knew his audience was small businesses who don't have a lot of time. There's too much noise in the market. They want one source that they can learn from. So he came up with this very tactical 5 to 10 minute. Kelsey, I'm going to give you 2 tips right now to grow your email list. And that's what the podcast is about. Whereas David, his approach was like, how can I create a podcast that's like about the selfish benefit? So like, how can I help you become better? And if I help you become better and we kind of skew it towards sales and marketing people, you'll eventually create an affinity for Drift and maybe you'll try our product at some point. And so that was much more focused on personal development than kind of the tactical day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, well, it seems there's a lot of authenticity that comes through that. And in that it was clear hearing I love the seeking wisdom stuff. And David is awesome. He's got a great voice. He's got, I mean, not only a spoken voice, but the way he communicates is just amazing. You know, you feel like you're talking to some oracle somewhere. And so it really fits. That was a spit take from Dave. So it really fits and works with the brand. And I think finding that connection is really important, right?
Well, that was the fun part. Like we played into that. That totally was the angle. And you know, this is the stuff that I love about marketing that I just don't think enough companies do. Like, this is the what's the hook? Like, I hate giving that advice because it's like, but I think most marketers don't. What is the actual hook? Like, I'm not going to listen to your podcast every day because you're going to talk about you. So what's the hook? And we had this cool hook, which was, here's average marketer Dave, 28 years old. Thinks he knows everything. Here's David Cancel, founder, entrepreneur, in his 40s, family. We had these two people kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum, and he basically lectured me in public on this podcast, you know, a couple times a month, and that became amazing content. And so I think, like, the more you can reverse engineer this and think about, like, it's not just about just tweet about what you're doing. It's not the advice of the book, but like, what interesting angle. And this is why I talk about like building a media company, because if you're a media company, you would think about who is our audience. And I think that you have to really understand they're being marketed to and promoted to in a million different channels, and everyone has a podcast and everybody's on social media. So how will yours be different? And so back to like the topic of like niching down, I think that's where this is really important. Like, reverse engineer this from the beginning. And this is where the magic is. It's not in the like, what platform will we use to record the calls? Where will we host the podcast? How often will we record? To me, the magic is like, what's the hook for this show? What's the reason someone's going to actually spend 30 minutes out of their day and hang out with us and listen to this? And I think that's where like 80% of the success comes from, not so much in the like the day-to-day execution of it. Like, you will succeed whether you pick Riverside or Zencastr. I promise you. The reason you will succeed gets done in the hook phase, not this phase.
And when you mention media, it's funny. Sometimes if you're old like me, you think in sort of this old school legacy, almost this broadcast world, but you mean something different from that. And it's funny, it is very generational where my generation would think of, oh, it's the New York Times and those printers and things like that. And the reality is that it's much more community and collaborative focused. And it's actually one of the things that's really compelling about becoming a media company that actually creates community at the same time. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is DGMG, your marketing community, which now have, 3,000 people in it or something like that, seems to be a really, really important source of feedback for you. So talk to me about, how you built that and how that sort of that community helps you sort of get inspired and create more content.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention to you, and I had this thought, I'm literally in my sweatpants and I was making a coffee before coming to this. And I'm like, I'm doing a bunch of podcast interviews like the next week or so. I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like I'm sitting in my house doing a book tour. I haven't hired a PR agency. I'm not working with anybody on this. And I have a schedule full of podcast interviews to do about the book. I have 15,000 people on my email list that I'm going to email on Tuesday. I have, 100,000 some odd LinkedIn followers to promote the book to, some Twitter followers. And those are vanity metrics. But my point is, I've built up this audience. And so I'm here doing a book tour in my sweatpants. I'm not like, pulling my hair out, trying to be like, how are we going to get people to pay attention to this book? And I'm living firsthand the power of having an audience and building an audience. So one of the values is like, what's the marketing strategy for the book? I don't know. The marketing strategy for the book kind of has already been done. It's like, I've built up a community of people who were like-minded people in marketing. And I now have my own audience that I'm going to hit publish to on Tuesday. And I'm going to send a book. I'm going to send an email and hopefully people will buy the book and tell their friends. I think that part's like, that's the ultimate like meta part of this as you were talking about. But I also think that the huge value in having a community is the feedback that you get from it. And so I even like, I put screenshots in this book, but early on in the process of this book, the title Founder Brand, Turn Your Story into a Competitive Advantage, was basically crowdsourced in my Facebook group. And I had a sense for like what I wanted the title to be, but I posted like, hey, I'm writing a book. Here's kind of three things that I'm thinking about for the title. Which one do you like best? And I got like 50 comments on that of people giving their own ideas and opinions. So like you get the feedback loop from the community that's really powerful. The way that it got built over time was kind of doing exactly this. I've only talked about marketing on social media for the last 5-6 years, and specifically focusing on B2B marketing. And I talk about creativity and copywriting a lot, but I would say 80% is about B2B marketing because that's what I've done. As a result of publishing consistently, having unique takes or strong point of views about marketing, I've attracted an audience of like-minded people who either want to learn marketing or maybe they follow me because they disagree or agree or whatever. That's attracted like-minded people. I built up an audience on social media. 2 years ago, I decided I wanted to transfer that audience from social media to actually a place where I could own and communicate regularly. And so I launched DGMG, which is my marketing community and a couple other channels with it. And a couple thousand people have come over there. And so what's powerful is like, yeah, it's great to have 100,000 whatever followers on LinkedIn, but the real powerful audience is like that 1,000 to 2,000 super active people in the community. And that's just come from over time. This isn't going to happen overnight. And I have a tiny audience compared to like some very big people out there, but having that community has become like a cheat code for figuring out what to do and what to create. And I'm sure you all feel it from your community. How many content ideas have you gotten from your community? How many podcast ideas? How many product roadmap ideas? Like there's more ideas of things that come from DGMG. And I feel like it gives me my finger on the pulse. And a really cool thing that's happening now is that I'm doing a lot of consulting right now. And so I'm working with a bunch of different companies in the B2B SaaS space. I get these learnings from these calls, then I get to go into community and be like, here's this trend that I'm seeing about product marketing. What do you all think about it? And then we have this amazing discussion. So I think like when you're actually in the weeds doing this stuff every day or involved in it, you can create really unique content and generate unique insights. And what I'm doing is exactly what I think I would be doing if I was a startup founder. This is not also, it's not for everybody. If you're very allergic to marketing and you have no appetite for marketing, and this book is not going to be the one to like convince you to do it. But if you're like, I've wanted to get some value like that, I believe in this idea, then I think it's probably a better fit.
It's interesting. You mentioned the learning from the consulting stuff as an example. And one of the things that I've done over the last year or so is I have this concept of open office hours. And I put a link on my Twitter bio and you can schedule 15 minutes and ask someone who purports to be an experienced CMO any question you want. And I find it amazing. And I do, you know, two or three of these a week. And they're 15-minute sessions that usually last more than 15 minutes, but that's what I commit to. And people say, wow, this is amazing. Why do you do this? And I said, well, I learn from it so much about what problems you're experiencing and gaming things out with you. I learn from them as much as they learn from me. So it's really amazing. But unfortunately, we're at the end of our time, and we need to try to wrap. And this, as usual, Dave, has been an amazing conversation. I have to say one more time, the book is fantastic. The Founder Brand is highly, highly recommended. You should definitely check it out. We'll make sure there's a link, and we'll publish sometime after the launch of the book, so the book will be live. And we'll have a link to the book. So definitely go get it. I highly recommend it, and join Dave's community, DGMG. And there'll be links to do that too. It's just an incredible fountain of knowledge and a lot of fun along the way, which is the best way to do it.
This is embarrassing. People are going to think that I paid you to say that. Please.
You didn't. No.
No, it's amazing. It's really, I've learned so much from your stuff, and you've been an amazing contributor. Oh, so then you've been an amazing contributor to DGMG. Like, it's cool to see you hop in and like give thoughtful answers to people. And the other benefit of the community is you get to meet people like you and Peter. And I think like we've created a relationship through that. And yeah, we don't hang out in person, but we have these interactions, and it's awesome. So I appreciate your help and your support of the book. And Kelsey, thank you so much. And it's really kind of you to have me on here. And if you want to buy the book, do it. If you don't, it's fine. It's okay.
No, you have to. Just Kelsey always has our one wrap-up question. So Kelsey, why don't you ask Dave your quick wrap-up?
My favorite color is blue.
Great, me too. But yes, our favorite question, and this has been excellent. I love being a fly on the wall for some of these conversations. But what advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one someday?
I would say don't care so much about how you get there. I think a lot of people get tripped up on like, okay, what's my path to CMO going to be? I think the best path to CMO is to become an expert in one field of marketing. Like, for example, you, and I've seen them from all examples, you became CMO because you were head of product marketing or head of demand gen or head of brand or head of comms. You can come up through each one of those because you need to have that deep expertise. And basically when you get to the VP or VP level of each one of those departments, you're not just running product marketing. You're basically acting like a business owner of product marketing. And when you get to that level, you have to work across the team anyway. And so when you become VP of product marketing, for example, you're going to start to collaborate with demand gen and content and PR and finance and ops. And so I would focus on becoming a director VP level marketing person in a specific focus area. And then over time you learn how to translate that. And then once you become CMO, you don't have to be an expert at each of those areas. You know your strength. And so I came up through kind of brand, comms, product marketing. My very first hire when I went to Privy was a very strong demand gen, revenue minded, analytical person. And you know, you have to think about how are you going to build a team around what areas you have expertise in? Because, you know, don't sweat it. Number one thing I see in DGMG is people ask like, how is it possible that I can be an expert in all these areas? You don't need to be. Once you get to that level, you're going to be working cross-functional anyway. So focus on becoming great at that thing that you're already starting to be good at.
Excellent advice. Niche, basically is what you're saying. But this has been great. I love being part of your community and looking forward to getting a physical copy of your book. Make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Kelsey.
Thank you.
A Pod Forte podcast.